Hello and welcome to another edition of the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Rob Allen from Kingston Technology. Rob, hi.
Good morning. Nice to see you again, Mike.
And likewise. So we thought this would be a good opportunity for us to talk about a secure by design approach to security and have a cache about how we reposition security away from being an end of project assurance activity into something that's more embedded into a project, that's more part of a project life cycle rather than assurance activity at the end. And I know we've sort of at events in the past where we've sat and had a coffee, we've talked about these things, and it seemed like a good time to get it down on tape. Tape? How old am I? Tape.
That's funny.
Anyway, welcome, Rob. So why don't you introduce yourself and let our listeners know a little bit about yourself.
So Rob Allen, I work for Kingston Technology. For those that don't know it, we're most famous for our DRAM, so our memory products and our storage products like SSDs. And I pretty much head up the whole of the marketing department and whole of the technical services department for EMEA, so our European headquarters, basically.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rob. So we sat and had a coffee at an event a couple of weeks back, a month or so ago, and we were talking about secure by design. More importantly, we were talking about the historical approach to security and accreditation and assurance and how it always seems to be something that gets bolted on at the end. Certainly for me, it's always felt a bit like getting to the latter stages of building a building and suddenly deciding you needed a lift.
Yeah. I mean, I've come across this on so many occasions. I'm just talking from my own personal experience and what I experience in the projects that we do internally. And I think I've mentioned some of them to you in the past, and not to dish the company, because the company is very good at what we do. Like I said, we're nimble, you know, we're successful. But even as an IT company, we fall short sometimes of some of the things that we should have embedded right from the beginning, right from the outset. And I think security by design is only really from my knowledge, has only really been around for the last 2 years, probably early 2023, people started to think that way. And certainly for us as an organization, we didn't really embrace that concept. And so I'm always seeing situations crop up now where we're going, yeah, we should have thought about that earlier. I'll give you an example. We are onboarded Salesforce for our organization, which is great. And because we want to bring a lot of the tools and things into Salesforce, we've been quite hasty at times to try and get certain things so that there's business continuity. You know, only recently we realized, my God, customers can upload through our website or through the various chat options because we've jumped from one chat, live chat product to another, because they haven't been good enough from one provider to another. I won't name names, but, you know, one thing we overlooked was the fact that sometimes we ask customers to provide us with a proof of purchase or some images of what happened to the product. And it never really crossed our mind that, you know, that could be some kind of ransomware embedded in it or some kind of zip file, which our services teams would probably not recognize until it's too late. So, you know, even an organization like that is sometimes overlooked. But if we'd adopted something like security by design back then when we were doing all of this project rollout, that would have been picked up.
Well, that's the great thing about secure by design, is that you're continually revisiting your risk assessment, continually updating it, looking at emerging threats, changes to technology, introduction of new functionality, and re-risk assessing all the way along. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the great thing about it, is you pick up on these things. And I think that's really important with some of the projects I've worked on in the past, where you start off going off in one direction and then functionality crops up and you end up with a little function creep getting brought on board. And before you know it, actually the product that you're you're managing isn't the product that you initially risk assessed.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, we've been pretty good. I mean, we were amazing during COVID to you know, enable a remote workforce. We used Okta for multi-factor verification for your remote devices, for your, also for your remote notebook and everything, and continuously, you know, challenging and verifying. So we think we're pretty good at it. But like I said, we overlooked that other aspect, and now we're thinking of onboarding, and I mentioned this to you before, something like Microsoft Copilot. And, you know,
and our, well, that opens up a whole load of other interesting conversations, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. And you know, and I get a bit nervous about it because I know how powerful it is and that it circumvents, you know, internal security passwords and so forth. So, you know, this zero trust approach, we need to have the security by design zero trust approach, because, you know, it's not just external threat, it's internal threat. Yeah. And sometimes we have to think of the simple things like least privilege access for for our employees, and so you can minimize that impact.
And do you think being able to put you know, real life examples like you've just been talking about there, in terms of, you know, the customers uploading documents or introduction of new technology that creates privilege challenges, being able to have those conversations in real time and put them into a real context actually helps to spread the language of risk into more than just the security teams themselves, but into the business teams.
Yeah, I mean, we are doing that more and more. I mean, we, you know, and I have to say the best approach that I've seen us do is actually get people in, consultants that are knowledgeable in that field, to give us that insight or to guide us. I mean, you can go to NIST, for example, and get guidelines. But me personally, and I don't know what your viewpoint on it is to get. So we had a one of our influencers who's an expert on AI come in and do a presentation to all of our management. And he talked very much about, you know, security by design and AI and some of the pitfalls and so forth. And I would like also to encourage our IT teams then to get expertise to come in and help them plan. And as a company, we've always done things bespoke ourselves. You know, it's always been on-prem, bespoke. And in the last 5 years, we're starting to embrace cloud technologies and move out. So we always had that security, you know, keep it all within ourselves approach. Yeah. But now things are evolving. This whole digital transformation, I think we need help. We need expertise from all different areas to come in and guide us. Otherwise, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to overlook something. And like you said, that terminology needs to be across the complete organization. That understanding of the terminology and what the risks are.
Yeah. Well, I think certainly, you know, our experience and with, you know, NIST currently, but also previously using standards like 27001 and, you know, data protection as legislation and a whole range of areas like this, is that actually bringing in an expert can reduce wastage further down the line. Because we can spend an awful lot of time trying to become the experts ourselves, but that could be more expensive than engaging with an expert at the start of the project and using that expertise and not reinventing the wheel. And certainly the clients we're working on with Secure by Design implementation now, what they're saying to us is that they're getting the best of both worlds, because they brought in an expert at the start, so we're able to explain to them what the various control requirements actually mean in real terms, because as you know, you can pick up a control requirement and go, okay, but I still don't understand what that means in terms of implementation. Well, okay, we can explain that. But what they're also getting as a result of that engagement is knowledge transfer. So their teams are becoming upskilled along the way as well. So they're not losing the delay trying to get upskilled, because the project is already in flight, but the upskilling will happen and there'll be an element of knowledge transfer that gives them sustainability further down the line.
For me, it's a no-brainer. We went through this difficult transition with compliance. You know, you mentioned GDPR and all these things. So, you know, our compliance team, now we're sort of like a compliance first organization, but we need to go that one stage further and wield in the whole security by design, the whole aspect of that element a little bit more, because it's not, doesn't always sit with compliance. It sits with IT.
No.
It floats really. It's everybody's responsibility to think about it, you know?
Well, you're right, Rob. It's hard to hive it off as an individual activity, because actually you've got the whole wrapper of governance, risk and compliance in play. And the technology is just part of the way in which we manage that risk. But the technology in itself isn't the be all and end all. It's all of the other soft controls, the way people behave, complying with policy, complying with legislation. Certainly we found we were going in post GDPR and working with clients and sort of saying, actually, no, you've completely misunderstood the requirement here in terms of lawful basis. What we should have been doing is this, and unpicking misunderstandings, which again ended up being more expensive for them in the long run.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't just have compliance. You can't just have risk. You can't just have technology. You need the whole governance, risk, compliance working holistically as an assurance activity across the organization, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you know, that's why, you know, I'm a great fan of getting the expertise in. But I'm also a great fan of, you know, we do a pretty good job of having security policies and data processing policies and things in place. We're good there, but it's for me where we probably miss it. You know what it's like in every organization. You're busy. We're a US company, so we have other trainings and things that we have to adhere to. There's a lot of red tape in life and business as we are today. But I do think it's vitally important to educate the workforce. And we do these, you know, like the phishing and ransom type trainings on a periodic basis where everyone has to go through a course, because they do change, and it has been, the whole landscape's changing anyway, where they have to then sit a test to see if they understood or aware of what to look out for and so forth. But it's predominantly heavy around email and SMS and stuff like that.
And there's always new and emerging threats coming through, aren't there? So, and I think, again, if we can link things like security testing, education, awareness, all of that into Secure by Design, then actually, as we identify emerging threats and the requirement for new controls, that automatically triggers a change in policy or an update to an education, or it may even be that in some cases we have to change the way in which we're delivering the awareness because we've identified a particular new level of risk. We were talking before we started the recording about hybrid working. Hybrid working has introduced a whole range of potential threats that we didn't have a couple of years ago. And if we're not careful, if we're in this sort of 1 year, 3 year cycle of updating our security posture, then we can become horribly out of date, and that can be quite dangerous.
Yeah, and I agree with one thing you highlighted a while back when we spoke about, you know, the hybrid working. And because I mentioned, I often see people working in cafes and all sorts of places, flipping up the notebook and working away and talking on the phone. It's that whole casual approach that people have to work, and sometimes confidential material or sensitive material that they're discussing quite openly in a non-work manner place. Yeah, I think that's something that has slipped. Also, the whole approach to working from home, I'm not available because I'm working from home.
Yes.
We had that little chat earlier as well. And, you know, and I think, you know, if that's the mindset, then that the whole business mindset is not going to be there, and including security and you know, treating data as if it's your own. It's too casual. It's too casual. And, you know, we had this, every year we reach out to TfL, to see, you know, what are the lost property results and stuff. And I've got some facts here. Yeah, it says in, I've only got last year's, we're still waiting for, 2023. So we're still waiting for what's up to year to date. But in 2023, the TfL network experienced a 25% increase of lost devices versus 2022. A further deep dive reveals London Underground had risen by 39%, that's staggering, and 40% for taxi journeys. And I've got the actual numbers. So taxis were 534 devices, and that can be a notebook, it can be a phone, it can be a USB key, whatever, electronic devices. Yeah. The Underground was 6,160.
Wow.
And across the total network, 18,286. That's an enormous amount of electronic devices.
18,000 devices. Well, that is phenomenal. Well, I mean, what you've got to ask, what's that saying? So there are more people who are using mobile devices now than ever before, right? Because COVID forced the hand there. So the desktop is dead, long live the laptop or tablet or whatever. And we've got more people, as you just said, people are being more casual around those devices as well. And the end point, the end point that was the office is no more either. So the end point can be a cafe, a train, your home, all sorts of things. So that puts a huge risk in the whole area around sort of data and data at rest and protecting data. You know, we used to think about data in transit as being data that's being transmitted across a network. But data in transit really is all of these devices being carried away around. And clearly, culturally, people are, they're not taking as good care of them as they should. Otherwise, those numbers wouldn't be so high. And the increase is what's really stood out at me is just how many more times people are doing it.
It is shocking when you hear, what was the percentages from 2022 to 2023? 39% on the London Underground and 40% in taxi journeys. But that's what's been found. And luckily, you know, TfL, they will protect and destroy and do what's necessary. But how many other devices get lost
elsewhere? And get found by somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, we saw this, didn't we, with a company called Zorn Fencing, who they lost sensitive site plans after one of their laptops was lost. And it later emerged the laptop in itself was not only insecure, but was also running legacy operating systems. So, you know, we've got to manage these devices in a way that provides us with that endpoint security. And, you know, that's a combination, isn't it, about access control, privilege management, we've mentioned that, but also, you know, device encryption that makes sure that the data on those devices can't be compromised when it is discovered.
And it's becoming more relevant now. I mean, you know, as a company, our company, I think it was about 5 years ago, decided to refresh what we call our encrypted USB line. And with those encrypted external SSDs as well in that. And at the time we were thinking, this part of our business is so small, it's negligible. It's about 0.01% or something of our overall revenue. But the owners and the business unit said, you know, we do make good money on it. It's not nothing special, but because of our position as probably the market leaders in this particular unique area, they said, we need to invest in this. We need to refresh it. We acquired a company called IronKey, and we made it Kingston IronKey. So we acquired IronKey, I don't know, it must have been back in 2015, and we refreshed then. And then about a few years later, we decided to do another refresh. The reason why we acquired IronKey is because we always wanted to get into, you know, the military. So IronKey had a contract. They were born by helping the US Homeland Security and providing products for them that matched every aspect of military grade security on devices like tamper evident, tamper proof. You don't need that for enterprise level drives and stuff, but we decided to have that whole portfolio. So consumer base, a cheap hardware encrypted USB right the way up to managed, digitized, brick enabled devices that cost a fortune. Only small organizations or the military would ever contemplate buying because, you know, they have to be rustic and hard, hard wearing, temperature.
Having spent time in the military and having worked alongside the military since then in my current career, anything that can be broken by somebody in the military will get broken by them. They're not, they're not delicate at times. And of course, they're being put into, often being deployed into dangerous situations as well, aren't they? So they have to be, you know, robust. But equally, 99.9% of the time, you would not put sensitive data that close to your enemy. But in the military, we do. So, of course, they've got to have that level of security put on them.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, with all those learnings, we've applied some of it. So we put, I wouldn't say the consumer base, but small, medium business USB encrypted drives, some of those are a little bit more expensive. Some of that range do have that epoxy, that resin inside the hard, you know, the tin or tin type casing, so that, you know, you can see if it's been tampered with, but even when you tamper with it, it destroys the chips that are under it. So,
right.
You know, it's that extra level of security. And because we've got that manufacturing process in place for certain form factors, we just do it for some of the other USB keys, so they get that added benefit at no extra cost and so. But sure. what we did do is we revolutionized the some of the features. So not necessarily the security, well, it is security, but things like digitizing, so it's not a physical keypad, so you can always see what's worn down on a physical keypad. It's digitized. So I guess you can see finger marks on the digitized screen, but it's a randomized one. So another level added to there. What else did we do? The passphrases. So we've introducing passphrases as instead of having passwords, which, you know, I think was a good step forward. So we did a lot of that whole refresh. We brought it all under the Kingston Iron Key, and we cost a fortune to do, to change all the SKUs, you know, the part numbers. And I just thought that was a fantastic foresight from the owners and the business unit, because all they said was we have a moral responsibility to move with the times, because cyber threats are just growing exponentially. And we need to keep in line, and they were right, you know, and it took 3 years to implement a lot of these things.
For me, and I'm just coming back to I'm still a little bit stunned by the data, to be honest, Rob. These are not always going to be inexpensive devices that we're talking about here. So if there's even a small number of these devices in amongst that 18,000 total devices discovered, that's still money that's being lost out of businesses through carelessness, isn't it? So, yes, we can use the device, we can use the encryption and the device to protect the data, but actually what we really want is for them not to get lost either, and that's a cultural and behavioural issue, not an IT issue.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, initially I always thought it was the hybrid working knock people out of a routine, you know, before everyone used to do the same thing every day, you know, straight into the office, straight out. Now this hybrid working, and then this week you're doing Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, next week you're going to do Tuesday and Friday, that this whole hybrid working knocks some kind of routine out of people, and that's where complacency sets in, or just simply forgetfulness, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, ultimately, you know, we're creatures of habit, aren't we? Routines work well when you start to introduce uncertainty and changes in routine. Then those old habits that we've built up over years get lost. And, you know, I was talking to somebody recently who was saying that one of the things they'd observed, for example, are people returning to the office having a period of working from home, simply just not locking their screen, because the home's a safe place, right? So why would you lock your screen at home? So they've lost the habit of just locking their screen when they're not using it. But then if that environment is not the office, but it's an internet cafe or, you know, a fast food joint or a train or wherever, where they're using a mobile hotspot and they're out of the habit of locking their screen, straight away, we've got an authenticated device that's been left in a vulnerable position.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just that, I mean, I know this is taken from cyber events a few years back, but I believe there was one at one of the cybersecurity events where they set up a little coffee shop and they had a van outside and they were offering free coffees for people to give a little bit of information about themselves on the
Yeah.
And then they returned the cup of coffee to show them how much information they got from them through that little bit of information that they parted with. And returned it by the time they had made a coffee and wrote it all down on the cup and said, "Yeah, nice to know you. I know everything about your family, your children."
Yeah. So I guess, you know, there's been a lot of change. There's been a lot of changes to working practices, to behaviours. As we just said, you know, there's more people working in an agile environment than ever before. Many people now have a mobile device that had never worked with mobile devices before. And I think, you know, this is, bring this back to Secure by Design. This is why Secure by Design is so important, because Secure by Design will naturally lead us into continually risk assessing our environment and our practices and our working behaviours and the technology. So not just the IT, but the data and the behaviours and the attitudes and everything else all get risk assessed on an ongoing basis. Whereas, you know, I know certainly in the past I've seen organisations where they're on a 3-year risk assessment cycle, so they'll only just be starting to pick up some of these now, post-COVID, rather than as they were happening.
Yeah, you know, like I said, we've got the whole digital transformation on many, many levels. Even simple things like IoT, these smart devices everywhere. You know,
I
mentioned it to you before, and as far as I'm aware, and I have checked with some of our engineering here, a lot of the embedded devices, the simple embedded devices, where it's memory and flash and M1, eMMC, and so some of these devices, they have no hardware encryption on them whatsoever. Wow. So a lot of these IoT networks or these smart device networks don't have any real security from the ground up. What they have done is sometimes, depending on how big they are, how sophisticated, like security cameras, they might have some kind of Phison controller or ARM processor on there, which has security, but it's usually a step further back and protecting the storage, which is good. But the communication aspect, there's no security, right? And
Exactly right, Rob. I mean, that's why when I was working with Tony Porter as the Surveillance Camera Commissioner, we introduced the standard for manufacturers of video surveillance systems for exactly that reason, because at the time, many of them were being manufactured and distributed without adequate security built into them. In fact, I remember at the time we had a discussion about what to call that standard, and we ended up calling it Secure by Default. The idea being that the product would be secure by default when it came out the box. Yeah. But also, at the time, there were already several secure by design and secure by designed standards out there. And of course, now we've got secure by design for the cyber world as well. So I wonder how, when we say secure by design, how many people know which one we're actually talking about?
Yeah. I know. I have heard our engineering saying that they do firmly believe that it's not all doom and gloom, that a lot of these IoT networks or smart device networks have a blockchain type of approach, that they're not part of the internal network or sitting within the centralized infrastructure of IT. That's often isolated. Not everybody thinks that way, or not everybody treats it that way.
And of course, as with any device, any IT device, whether it's operational technology, IoT, core IT, peripheral IT, it's how it's configured and then how it's implemented into the network, right? So considering the wider implications of every piece of technology and where it sits in the infrastructure is important. which again, you know, SBD asks you to do that. So, you know, if we follow these standards properly, then these questions get asked and we don't miss something and we don't end up inadvertently introducing a vulnerability.
Yeah, and it loops back to where we started the whole conversation, you know, and that's why I firmly believe we need external expertise to come in when we do big projects like the onboarding of Microsoft Copilot or whatever. I think as an organization, we need to be educated. We need to really seriously consider this least privilege approach access approach, you know, permissions and controls and all. We really, really need to think it through because it's so powerful. I mean, I use some of the chatbots and Pi and it's amazing what you can get from these.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's getting better all the time. And I think even, you know, I read an article about how they're going to leverage AI and machine learning for, you know, to mitigate in a positive approach, you know, some of the cyber threats that are out there, because, you know, it can learn, it can mm-hmm. check and analyze and probably foresee vulnerabilities that it should be there. And there's talk of deploying bots to attack or mitigate, you know, it all sounds really sort of like futuristic for me, but, you know, but I know it's very much out there. There's a lot of talk because I find it an interesting space anyway, and I often read articles on it. But it's reassuring to see that AI could help mitigate some of these threats as well, you know.
Well, I was about to say, we can't obviously have a technology chat and not talk about AI. it's been in the press again this week. And very much depending on who you listen to and what their point of view is, it's either the saving of mankind or the destruction of mankind. And there doesn't seem to be any wiggle room in between the two camps at the moment. But certainly the opportunity for it to be used for good, equally the opportunity for it to be used for bad. And we know that criminals are very adept at picking up and using new technologies in ways that we may not have foreseen. And, you know, there's a story recently about an organization where due to a deepfake technology, they'd been fooled into thinking they were on a legitimate Teams call and had ended up transferring $25 million to cyber criminals as a result of that. So, you know, these are the things that when I was a kid was the stuff of science fiction, but seems to be so real and so touchable now. And, you know, we keep having these Black Mirror moments where suddenly you realize that it's not fiction anymore, it's fact.
Yeah, you know, you just need to go onto Google and see what they did with the I'm Not Morgan Freeman. And it talks about the AI and what are you looking at? What, you know, are you being tricked? Can you trust what's out there? But, you know, it's like everything. Things need to be, there needs to be policies, it needs to be legislated. Yeah. I heard a lot of the big social media providers are going to add little red spots or something to avatars or digital pictures or videos that have been doctored or, you know, manipulated or photoshopped or whatever. So that, you know, they're going to bring in things to try and keep in track with what's happening, you know, to try and help mitigate some of this false news and stuff that's out there, because it's terrible. It's we got the election coming up.
I was just going to say with the announcement of a 4th of July election, we're in the prime opportunity now, aren't we, for a disinformation and misinformation war. Both I use the term loosely, legitimately done by the various political camps, but of course without doubt there will be information manipulation by nefarious groups as well.
Yeah, and it's easy to do. Apparently, I've not done it myself. I've played with DaVinci and I played with Pi. These are two AI tools that you can use. And, you know, it's amazing how quick you can do some of these things. And there are these avatar video AI tools becoming available. So you can do training videos in 70 languages using an avatar of your choice. It's limited.
Yeah.
But, you know, and It's
and,
amazing.
And with the technology evolving so quickly now, and I know it's ChatGPT version 4 has just come out with various voice interaction capability, and apparently, raised my eyebrows at this one, the ability to flirt with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Pi is the one I use myself. Is Pi is like your personal assistant.
Right.
Which you can choose a voice. It's limited what voice, but you can have female, male voice, older, yeah, younger, you know, and it does approach you in a soft, personal way. Like you'll go, "Hi, Rob, how are you today?" you know, and but that's the whole thing. So, but it is scary how fast we're moving. Luckily, you know, the articles I've been reading on AI and cybersecurity, a lot of it seems positive that it's going to be deployed in a way to mitigate the potential threat.
Well, you know, I've been in security and indeed insecure for 30 years now. And I've seen that battle continuously for 30 years, that always responding and adapting to the new and emerging threats and the new and emerging attacks. But it's as though in the last few years, that gap in between a new technology, a technology becoming mainstream, and a new technology coming on again, seems to be getting shorter and shorter. And I guess, you know, to bring this round to what we were talking about as part of this podcast day, this is where we have to have Secure by Design become mainstream, because we have to be more agile, more responsive, more adaptive. And our risk management, with the emerging threat being so agile and changeable, our risk management has to become more agile and changeable as well.
Would you suggest anything for an organization, looking at our organization, for example, you know, locally, not on a global level, but locally, we've got about 200 odd employees. We have a lot of our own tools and projects and software implementations, you know, to satisfy our needs, because doing business in Europe is inherently different to the US or APAC.
Sure. There are
different challenges, like what Brexit brings and all the rest of it. Would you suggest employing like a cybersecurity officer, or because we have a compliance team, we have a legal team, you know, we have a complete IT department. Would you say that would be the right approach, or outsource
that? I don't. I'm not a big fan of having that sort of definitive that this is what you must have, because I think that very much depends on each organization and their maturity and their capabilities and the people that they've got in house. Yeah. Certainly, we find that through services we've got, like my security manager and my DPO, we can drop expertise into an existing team and augment it without an organization necessarily needing to go and recruit what can be quite expensive resources to have as full-time in-house resources. But again, I think the beauty of using a methodology like Secure by Design is it also then naturally says, and these are the skills we're going to need to be able to do this implementation and manage this in an ongoing basis. So that then drives you down the route of deciding what resource you need. And does that need to be, you know, permanent in-house? Does it need to be outsourced? Does it need to be ad hoc consultancy? Or does it need to be a blend of all of them? Because sometimes that's the best route, is having a bit of everything.
Yeah. Just like I said at the beginning of the call, we've stumbled across a few things where, you know, it's an oversight. It's a pure oversight. So, you know, I'm thinking now with, you know, future projects in mind, you know, we always do the compliance approach, but not necessarily always that risk assessment and cyber. I think mainly because our HQ sits in America, and anything web or external facing is usually managed by them.
Yeah. But I guess that's the beauty of organizations like us, is we've worked in many environments and many projects. So that kind of being able to foresee the things that other people might not see, you know, missing the security challenges or not thinking the what if we do this, is there potential for this to happen? That's kind of what we do, because that's what we're doing day in and day out. Like my friends often say to me, you know, Mike, you're such a paranoid person, but I say it's not paranoia, it's foresight.
Yeah. And I was just looking at the sign behind your head. It says transforming business through security.
Absolutely. That's what we've been about all these years. It's actually making business, do business well, and enable business, but doing it in a way that has security at its heart as well. And I'm a strong believer that the two can go hand in hand.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, the last thing we want as an organization is to have some kind of threat or some ransomware, you know, within the organization. Absolutely.
Yeah, and we see plenty of those nightmare stories in the press, don't we? And the last thing we want is for
any of our
organizations to end up in the same situation.
It is very true, but typically, often, these things, companies only change direction when something happens. It needs an incident to force change. I'm quite happy that, you know, we are thinking that. We are thinking security by design on many levels here. So I feel quite secure. It's just that when the notion of implementing Microsoft Copilot very soon scares me.
There you go. So, implementing secure by design on many levels and having it as an embedded part of our culture and psyche across many business areas and not just IT, but as a compliance, as a governance, having our senior leaders understand what it's all about and why it's important. You know, all of that comes out of Secure by Design, because ultimately wrapped around all of the NIST standards is the requirement to have good governance, and the good governance drives all of the other behaviours.
Absolutely. What about, you know, because I would have thought most organisations, we did a good job in for COVID, deploying our workforce, implementing security standards and everything. Mm. We did a very, very good job during that whole COVID period. And, you know, the multi-factor authentication and verification on many levels and many times. It wasn't always, you know, we have various tools that if they're left idle for so many minutes, it will come up and you have to log in again and authenticate again.
Yeah.
So we're pretty good on that level. But would you suggest the organizations that, because security by design is a fairly new thing, well, it is for me, would you suggest that organizations do some kind of security audit at some point? Because, like I said, we've overlooked something that's only just become apparent now, because we've been, you know, this whole digital transformation, we want to be nimble and stay at the forefront and make sure that we've got all the right tools in place so that our guys can do work efficiently and effectively and aggressively against our competitors.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of these projects going on and not always done from this HQ here, but sometimes out of APAC or out of the US, that we did notice that, you know, we were vulnerable in one area, which we're going to fix, but we need to nail it down. We stumbled across it. But that was something that was put in place 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I do recommend that organizations do some sort of, whether you call it an audit or a review or a stock take or whatever, because I think it's important to have absolute understanding about where you're at. If for no other reason than that, what that also allows you to do when you're looking at other new programs of work through Secure by Design is you can reuse existing good practice, existing knowledge, existing technologies and existing tools rather than trying to reinvent the wheel. So, hey, you know, we've already done that over here and it works really well. Great. Let's keep doing it, but do it over here as well. Because, and sometimes that is as important to organizations as is saying, and we found a gap. And yes, you know, it's great to find the gaps and be able to fill the gaps, but it's also great, and from an effectiveness and an efficiency perspective, to be able to say, and here's something that's really good, let's reuse it.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Mm. I mean, I'll reach out to the various stakeholders here and you know, ask them, you know, is that something they should be, you know, contemplating in the near future? But that's a good idea.
Right. Well, I think it's time to wrap this up, Rob. Thank you very much for your time this morning. It's always great chatting to you. Really enjoy it. And I know we always have we always struggle to then rein our conversation in and not end up becoming a morning of chat rather than just a podcast. But I'm sure at the next event that we go to, we'll sit down and continue this conversation.
Absolutely. It's been a real pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed catching up with you, and always a pleasure. I might go off at a tangent here and there, but that's just the way I am. I'd apologize to anybody listening to this.
Thanks, Rob. So just very quickly then to recap, change is happening really quickly now. We live in a world where there's an agile threat environment, and our response in terms of how we manage risk and how we manage the implementation of controls has to become much more agile. One of the great methodologies of ensuring that that happens is secure by design. And it's great to see secure by design becoming part of the conversation, and much more mainstream than it was a couple of years ago. Picking the right security solution to manage the right risk and having the right tools that are supportive of the risk management, but also fitting the business needs and delivering against business capabilities is important. And that is what really we only get that by doing dynamic risk management. So let's hope that going forward, secure by design becomes the way of doing things and that agile risk management becomes the norm. Yeah, Rob, thanks very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. This has been the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. I've been Mike Gillespie, and I've been joined today by Rob Allen from Kingston Technology. Until next time, take care.